You're watching Meet the Movie Press, and coming up, we're going to be talking about Fast and Furious 9 beef, Avengers Infinity War, tracking the return of Jay and Silent Bob, a bunch of new releases, and a female Indiana Jones. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Meet the Movie Press.
Oh, lights again. Flashing
Hello,
lights.
Simon. Hey,
I thought the first time a couple of weeks ago was someone hadn't paid the bill.
I don't know what you're implying there, but we have to keep quiet this morning.
Why is that?
Because if you make a noise, they'll hunt you.
Oh.
They'll find you. It's the weekend.
It's the weekend.
A quiet place.
A quiet place.
You're watching me, the Movie Press, folks.
Quiet.
I'm your host, Jeff Snyder.
Mildly.
Editor-in-chief of
Mildly Sinister.
The Tracking Board, tracking-board.com.
Slightly erotic.
And at the end, Snyder on Twitter and Instagram, slightly erotic is my middle name. With me as always.
Hyphenated. Is Simon Thompson, at Showbiz Simon on Instagram and Twitter. And there's a Facebook page where you can give me all your data, which I can sell for money. It's very in right now.
It is a Quiet Place weekend, along with Blockers weekend. Yeah. We've got two new releases that are finally worth talking about. It's been a while.
Two movies that made me realize why I don't want to have kids. For different reasons.
it's really funny because, yeah. You know, I was going to say that I got woken up early this morning.
Did you get woke?
I got woke.
What?
I woke. I got. I don't know where I'm going with that, but a buddy of mine had a child this morning.
Okay.
My buddy Matt Silverman, who you may have seen with me at screenings, he brought Sonny Silverman into the world.
Holy shit, that's an amazing
Sonny
name.
With an O, like come here, Sonny.
As opposed to Sonny, as
and
in
he's a,
holy
he's
shit,
a,
that burning thing.
A beautiful
in the sky
little baby,
burning.
And yeah, I look forward to watching a whole bunch of animated movies
he
with them.
He was expecting it, right? It wasn't like a surprise.
No.
Because you hear about these pregnancies sometimes where ladies are like, didn't know I was pregnant, took a shit, and a baby came out.
I don't think it was like that.
Okay. I'm not a doctor.
I was just, my mind immediately went to movie characters and like, Sonny, like, isn't that, you know, from The Godfather?
Yeah.
And also that Nick Cage, James Franco movie where he plays a male prostitute, so.
Yes, I
hopefully
think
he won't grow up into that
I
kind of
Sonny.
I don't
think the name's Sonny after the second one.
Anyways, yes, they're both they both involve family, Blockers and A Quiet Place.
They do.
In very different ways, and we will be talking about them later in the show. We'll get into that.
That's what we do.
We'll roll up the sleeves.
Every
but for
week.
Now, let's start where, you know, this is what everybody wants to talk about this week. The Rock and Vin Diesel. Is it real? Is it real or is it just theatrics, Simon?
I kind of think it's a bit real. You can tell when The Rock is doing theatrics, and you can tell when he's kind of being polite about something. I think this is genuine beef.
I feel like I'm
getting a. I wouldn't want to be the fly on the wall if those guys were left in a room. That would be the most uncomfortable room to be in ever.
I love The Rock, and I'm Team Rock here. I believe. Mm-hmm. As I am just always, just in general, it's a good team to be on.
Yeah.
But
he's quite successful.
But it's like, yeah, he's not that good an actor where, like, I think that this is beef, like theatrics. I think that this is legit.
Yeah.
Well, you know, whether he actually doesn't return for Fast and Furious 9, if he just, you know, goes off in that spin-off direction, who's to say?
I like the fact that when you referred to it at the opening of the show as Fast and Furious 9 Beef, I was if beef with the subtitle.
Beef.
Fast it's and Furious 9
dinner.
Beef. That would be a great title.
That,
there
was a comma.
Just basically. Because
you're right. I like
it
that.
It's all the guys in the movie. It's like Fast and Furious 9
Beef.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, if I had a choice of continuing the franchise and it was either going ahead with Dwayne Johnson at the helm or Vin Diesel at the helm, I would choose.
Well, that's an obvious choice.
I would choose The Rock, and I would bring in, and this is something that has been discussed this week, John Cena.
Bringing in John Cena into that mess. I think John Cena is smart enough to avoid that. Which is the first time anybody said that.
Yeah. I just think that would be really good, but I think there's enough good characters in there that you can draw on. I don't dislike Vin Diesel in movies. I watch a lot of his movies.
Yeah, that's the thing. Those movies are Dom Toretto.
They are. But, I mean, I would not be averse if for one movie they took it away from Dom. They rested Dom and it was moved in a different direction.
I kind of, you know.
That's why I'm looking forward to the spin-off with Statham.
Listen, I'm looking forward to the spinoff as well. But I think it's like if you get rid of one of them, like I'd get rid of The Rock.
Really?
I would get rid of, like, in terms of Fast and Furious 9, I don't think you need Hobbs. You need Toretto. You need him. Like, he's the franchise. That's the truth. You really think you could just lose Dom Toretto and these movies are the same?
You could totally write
that. I'd rather see The Rock not do one less action tentpole like this, you know, every couple of years, and then go like do some cool indie.
As a character, Dom Toretto is essential. I think as a dramatic presence, he doesn't have, for me, the dramatic presence of some of the other characters, where even if they're larger than life and they're kind of like, you know, sort of bombastic and, you know, colorful, I just think Vin Diesel is just, he's very monotone. What you get is that there's an angrier and there's a slightly softer, but it's kind of very much on a, it's a very much around a plateau, rather than someone like The Rock, where I think if Dominic Toretto, right, disappeared, got kidnapped, and they had to go and maybe find him, great. Perfect solution.
Were you surprised that they did not film any scenes together, that was, like, confirmed?
No.
No, neither was I, and that's because, you know, I felt like I got talked out of, like, a much larger story about the Fast and Furious 8 set. Which I have heard that F. Gary Gray just lost complete control of, which is like,
yeah,
no fault of his. He's a veteran director. Yeah. He just, you know, made Universal a ton of money with Straight Outta Compton. But it's why I felt so confident in being like, there's no way.
But also,
that he's coming back to do the next one.
I've worked with Vin Diesel. I've interviewed him a number of times. Mm-hmm. He can be a great interviewee, but when he's not, mm-hmm. when he's just doing whatever he wants, there is no controlling Vin Diesel. Vin Diesel, whether he's having fun or whether he wants to do whatever.
There's a lot of big egos on that set, yeah, and it's a director's job to corral them.
But you know Dwayne is someone who's going to bring it. If you want it done this way, he does it that way. He'll give you a take that he's got an idea of, and you can do it that way as well. He's very committed. He's there to create the product, and he wants it to be the best. I think Vin Diesel is also there in a way, but I think it's on Vin Diesel's terms. From my experience, I mean, I've interviewed him a lot of times, red carpets and junkets, and it's completely unpredictable in any situation, but, like, so I can understand.
The one thing that is predictable about that situation is that he knows he's going to talk to press. So he's on a certain kind of behavior. I mean, yeah. Everybody's you're not really being yourself in that kind of environment.
No.
I mean, you know, like, I just love, like, this
that
perception.
True.
You know, it's like all these people who go to the junkets are like, oh, my, he's just the nicest. And I'm like, man.
And he can be. I've had interviews like that. And then other times you're like, what are you on?
I wasn't talking about him specifically. A lot of these junket interactions lead to these feelings that, you know, a so-and-so celebrity is a super nice guy, and it's like,
no, but sometimes, you know, if they're going through the motions, sometimes you walk into a room and they know.
It's different when these people are working on set and you've been under the hot sun all day and you're filming the 16th take of some action sequence.
Absolutely.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, also, I mean, Nicolas Cage is another.
People don't seem to know how movies get made.
Nick Cage is a really good example. Nick Cage is someone I absolutely love talking to all the time. But I think over the space of about 2 years, I did 3 or 4 interviews with him. It's when he had a load of movies coming out, pretty much within a couple of months of each other. And every single time, each different movie, whether it was The Sorcerer's Apprentice or whether it was, G-Force, I would then be talking to him like, well, you know, I always felt I was like a wizard. And then, like, he was like, oh, I've always found guinea pigs, I've had a lot in common with guinea pigs. And I'm like, you don't know what you're going to get sometimes when you walk in there. Sometimes you do, but sometimes you don't. But I just think out of the two, I would, going back to the original point, I can see them not doing that together. One of them will leave. If I was the studio, I would persuade The Rock to stay and maybe rest Dominic Toretto. But I know that possibly won't be the most popular decision.
That is an interesting thing that you said, though, about the mission, where, like, you know, Dom disappears and they're trying to find
him. They've done it with other characters, and it's worked really well.
Okay. Avengers Infinity War tracking.
Yeah.
Now, looking at 200 million.
Tracking's really unreliable. I was doing a Jeff. Tracking's really unreliable. Why don't people get excited about this stuff?
It is.
Yeah, it is.
Okay,
I just thought for a change I would do that. Why does anybody give kudos to these figures? Ah!
So yeah. What do you think of the $200 million figure?
I think it's modest, realistically. I think it's... I can see it doing 210, maybe 220 opening weekend. Yeah. I think it's... I mean, I think the type of excitement... This year, obviously, Black Panther is kind of...
That's the thing. I think Black Panther has opened up the audience for something like Infinity War.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's sort of, you know, there were a lot of people whose probably first exposure to the MCU was through Black Panther, and now they want to continue that character's adventures and see what's next.
And I think the buzz and the degree of buzz, I think there's a slight difference in the buzz for both those movies. I think the Avengers is self-generating and self-perpetuating buzz. You know, that's not going to go away. Everyone's going to look forward to that next, like a James Bond movie or a, you know, whatever. You're always going to look forward to these movies coming out. And yet, I think Black Panther buzz, which obviously did phenomenally well. I mean, it's now beat the Avengers, the most successful one domestically. And I just think it's slightly different. But I think this one's going to do humongously well. I think your point about, you know, bringing in new people and people who perhaps might have steered clear previously. And also, it's a greatest hits. So if you like some of the Marvel movies, not all of the Marvel movies, you're pretty good odds that you're going to find your favorite
something
character
for every,
in there. Yeah,
exactly. There are people who are like, man, I didn't like Thor the Dark World. I'm not going to go see Thor 3.
Yeah.
Who are going to turn out for this movie. So, yeah, I think it's a little early on the...
Someone
on
suggested,
the
just going back to Fast and Furious very quickly, someone suggested Nicolas Cage is the villain for Fast and Furious
I
9.
Think he would fit right in that insanity, and that insanity soup that is the Fast franchise.
But yeah, no, with
God bless its soul, by the way.
I think for Avengers 200 is, I think, a little bit low. I can see it doing 210, 220 very easily. What are you
think? I think that has to be the expectation, is 200 minimum. I mean, I was surprised.
I'd be amazed if it didn't touch that.
I think some trade reports were like, Disney's saying, you know, 175 to 200, but of course Disney's, you know, going with the lower expectation. Trying to set those lower expectations. Anyways, listen, Avengers and Infinity War is going to be just fucking fine, okay?
Well, I saw lots of headlines this week going like, Avengers Infinity War is going to be a hit. And I'm like,
going? I mean, imagine, like, what do you think that the investment is on that? That's got to be $300 for the movie and $200 for marketing. It's going to be a $500 million movie.
Yeah. I would be very surprised if it didn't open around the figures that we've said for that weekend. I would be very surprised if it didn't quite easily pass the $1 billion mark. I think it's going to walk that. I think it could possibly be...
Fucking Jumanji made almost $1 billion.
Yeah, I think it's going to walk that very easily. And is it potentially going to beat out Black Panther to be the biggest film of the year today? I think possibly. I think it'll be close, but I think possibly... We'll see.
Simon, I just got a great press release.
Hey, what is it?
First of all, if I was to say the words Rex Manning Day to you, do you know what I'm talking
about?
Yes,
I do.
Say no more, baby.
No, no more.
I just got a press release that there is a Broadway adaptation of Empire Records coming.
Shut the front door.
Yep. This is great. By the way, so I watched Empire Records last week, which is kind
just
of what
a genius
what made,
movie. Yeah. I love that.
It's adorable. It's one of those 90s teen classics or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Broadway, baby.
Dude, that's awesome. I'm genuinely
maybe it'll be
excited.
The next Lion King. I love the soundtrack.
I see a lot of movies that are that are sort of turned into Broadway shows. I mean, Mean Girls, I'm kind of excited to see. I'm interested. Beetlejuice, I'm not entirely convinced.
They have
by
to
that.
Have a song called Shoplifter.
Oh, 100%.
Shoplifter!
I just hope they bring... Queen Sarah Saturday, the band, out of retirement. They put them back together and do the song. You know the bit where he puts the song and everybody goes crazy in the store?
Uh-huh.
That's their song.
My name isn't fucking Warren.
Yes.
Who glued these fucking corners down?
Oh, it's such a great movie.
Okay, Venom. There was a rumor this week that that Woody Harrelson's character is going to be Carnage.
I heard this.
What do you think about this?
I'm a big fan of Woody Harrelson. I think in the last couple of years he's done some really interesting roles. They haven't always been box office success, but I think he's really had some interesting plays. And I think he's only been so far away from doing a role like this. I think not knowing the character particularly well, I know of it, but I'm not as familiar with it as some other people. From what I've read about the character, and I know about the character so far, I think actually he'd be a really interesting choice. I thought they might go for somebody a little bit younger, maybe by about 5 or 10 years. But I would love to see him doing this. Listen, in the same way that Michael Keaton as the Vulture in Spider-Man, I thought was excellent.
That reported this, and I don't know who it is, so I can't give you a shout. I forget. Mm. Honestly, they seem very confident in their reporting, and I buy it. Woody Harrelson was a late addition to that cast. When Riz Ahmed was cast, Sony was very adamant that he wasn't playing Carnage.
Yep.
But that said, I did hear that Riz was playing Carnage. So I don't know if that's like one of those things where at the very end of the movie, Riz becomes Carnage and then is Carnage going forward. I don't know. I don't know what Carnage is. I don't know if it's like a fucking...
Not good.
A gene, a mutation that news. Like multiple people can contract or have or something. I don't know. But yeah, all I'm saying is... I was under the impression that Riz was going to be Carnage. I think Woody makes more sense as Carnage, but who knows? It's fun to speculate, though. I'm just like there needs to be a little bit of mystery there. Like it would be the wrong time for this news to be getting out if that was the case that Woody Harrelson is in fact Carnage.
I also would really if it is the case and it is a tease and it's like he appears at some point in Venom, I'd kind of miss the days where we just discovered these things when we go into a screening or when we go
that's
in.
That's the thing. It's
it's spoiling the wonder a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know that a trade would necessarily have reported this. I don't know if someone had like told me definitively, like, you know, Woody Harrelson's playing Carnage, I don't know if I would go with that story. Depends on how the movie treats it. Mm. If he's going to be in the trailers as Carnage, that's one thing. But like, if it's a reveal in the story and you're not quite sure who Carnage is at first, that's a shitty thing to do. So I'm just saying, sometimes even though you get some cool information, it doesn't mean you have to report it.
No. We sit on a lot of stuff.
Simon's sitting on a chair right now.
Sitting on a chair. This morning I was on a sofa.
Crazy. This was a big one. Okay. Steven Spielberg left the door open this week for a female Indiana Jones.
He did.
Is that actually going to happen, or is this just a nice quote?
It's not
going to
happen. I think it's just a nice quote. It's all out of the stuff that's coming in around Ready Player One, and lots of people have done various interviews with him. He also said this week that, no, I mean, this didn't come as a surprise, but Indy 5 is going to be Harrison Ford's last outing as Indiana Jones. And then people were like, oh, could it be a woman?
It'll be his hologram going forward.
I'm amazed they've actually had him back for this one. But, I mean, I realistically don't see Indiana Jones being a woman.
First of all, it wouldn't be Indiana Jones, okay? It would be something else, and it would probably be like Tomb Raider. Like, isn't Tomb Raider the female Indiana Jones?
Yeah.
It's the same fucking thing.
Yeah.
I think that if they wanted to do a female Indiana Jones movie, they would just do a movie based on Marion.
Mm-hmm.
Marion Ravenwood movie. I know someone with a great take on it. Lucasfilm, Disney, call me. I'll put you in touch with them, although I'm pretty sure you already know who it is.
Is it you?
It's not me.
Oh, okay.
Dude, I don't even like Indiana Jones. I was the guy who just left Indiana Jones off of his top 10 Spielberg movies list, and everyone was like, well, this list is now illegitimate
that
without
went
Raiders.
Down well, didn't it? You don't agree with me, therefore what you think is invalid.
I'm not a fan of Indiana Jones. I don't think that you would see a female Indiana Jones. If you did, I mean, is there anybody who you would really want to see? It can't be some fucking Brit. I'll tell you that right now. It can't be fucking Felicity Jones or Daisy Ridley.
Melissa McCarthy. To be honest with you, I don't know. I can't think of anybody that off the top of my head that
people
I think
said
would be.
Like Gina Rodriguez. One person threw out Carrie Coon, which was actually not a bad suggestion.
Maybe.
I'm just
not particularly interested in a female Indiana Jones. There are several other characters I think that you could switch gender on, but you would. It's like I don't think we're going to see a female James Bond anytime soon. I know that story keeps coming around. I don't think we're going to see that anytime soon.
So here, okay, this was the fucking hilarious thing about this item, though. So did you see the quote from Spielberg? And it was like, well, you know, if we did make her female, she'd have to be Indiana Joan, like Joan. And people are like, that's not how last names work, no. Steven. I thought that was priceless.
It'd be like Anna Jones.
Indiana Joan.
Anna Jones, like, or something. No, you can't. Some people are idiots.
Two characters who I do like who are coming back besides Indiana Jones.
Who's that?
Are Jay and Silent Bob.
Yeah.
They're part of this STX surreal. By the way, STX has so many. Okay, STX, please listen to me. Like, I love you. I really like those guys. I like Bob Simons. You gotta lose all these STX in capital letters and then some other word coming behind it. There's STX film, STX surreal. There's a billion STX fucking things. Just be STX and have divisions.
Yes.
They don't all need their own fucking branding.
No.
But anyways, they're doing this Jay and Silent Bob VR that actually sounds pretty cool. And you get to see things from the point of view of Silent Bob.
Yeah.
I love those guys. They have great banter. I mean, I'm all for more of those two characters. What do you think?
No, very much so.
Are you a Kevin Smith fan?
Yeah, I'm a massive Kevin Smith fan. I mean, I see, you know, some positive things in some of his films, which I think are really not good movies. There are some that I just straight out don't like. I've really never been a fan of Cop Out.
Listen, there's a lot of bad Kevin Smith movies. Like, that's okay for me to say. Kevin knows I love him.
But I think
I'll still see anything he makes.
Yeah, I think his initial canon of work was exemplary.
Showing Stephanie Mollerats this week, and I literally have that film on top of Chasing Amy and Jay and Silent Bob on my coffee table.
Interesting. No, Red State is a movie of his that constantly gets great. Overlooked.
Tusk
was
great.
Tusk was really interesting. I didn't love it, but I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah.
But no, I think Kevin's got a great, I think he's a great, you know, filmmaker.
They had like a Mile 22 spinoff. They're real serious about this movie Mile 22. Mm. I'll tell you that right now. I mean,
good.
Sounds interesting. Mark Wahlberg, Ronda Rousey, and Iko Uwais from the Raid movies, and Malkovich, I think. I'm down. There was also a project from the John Wick writer. I don't know. They had some interesting stuff. Mm. Are you a VR guy in general, though?
Generally not, to be honest with you.
Me neither.
I think it's still very niche.
But I would, I suppose, put on the glasses and download an app or whatever if it had Jay and Silent Bob on it.
If the product was right, I would totally, I'd give it a go. But, I mean, I don't see myself investing in that technology individually. Which actually goes nicely onto 3D.
Do it.
Because, I mean, a couple of years ago when I was living back in London, I was quite a big fan of 3D. I thought a lot of movies did it very well. A lot of movies didn't do it particularly well. I've never been a massive fan of sort of taking a movie that was made in 2D and turning it into 3D. I think that more often than not doesn't really work. I even invested in a 3D TV, which I had for a couple of years, something I never utilized.
Whoever uses the 3D thing on their TV?
Maybe twice, maybe three times a year. And I certainly didn't invest in a lot of... mostly it was free check discs that I got that were 3D. I wasn't going to pay that extra bit to get that extra disc.
Yeah.
It often didn't repeat everything, the experience at home. It's turned out this week that 3D movie ticket sales are now at the lowest level for 8 years. We touched on this recently with a number of movies that often the 3D version that you see is not as good. It's better to see them in 2D. I mean, I really enjoyed Ready Player One. I love that movie. I really enjoyed it in 2D. For me, that had all the richness and depth that I needed. I didn't want to have that extra dimension, which I know it is available in some screenings.
That movie actually would be interesting in 3D. If I'd gone to that screening and they had given me glasses, I would have been okay with it because I would have understood. Most of these movies, you're right, I always take the 2D option when they offer it to you.
Yeah.
That said, you know, like, so I have a 3D TV as well, I guess we're using my roommates in the living room, and we have movies like Avatar and Gravity, and those are like maybe two of five movies that are worth watching in 3D.
Mm.
But you're right. For the most part, a lot of these conversions, that kind of stuff,
I often find them they're
quite... And it's more expensive.
It is more expensive. And I also find that sometimes when there's too much going on screen and it's in 3D, I mean, I've watched some of the Transformers movies in 3D, and that's like spinning out.
You don't need the extra dimension
that's
there.
That's like being completely off your face and being shouted at by robots. It's just too busy. Even with Spider-Man last year, Spider-Man Homecoming, that was the last one I saw in 3D. And to me, at times there was just too much. I couldn't get a clear enough grasp of the image in 3D to actually genuinely enjoy what was going on. And I had to watch it again in 2D to actually get a better feel for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not surprised it's going down. I think a lot of theaters are going to kind of move away from this. A lot of distributors generally we're seeing a move away from it. And audiences are clearly, they're just not either willing to pay the money or it's not giving them that extra... bit that extra D that they want. You know, people are more invested in going like the 4DX kind of chairs and those moving experiences, and even that's not wildly popular. I just think if you give people really, really good vision, really, really good sound, in 2D is perfectly fine. You know, that's just me though. But
you think if they're going to have 3D in Saudi Arabia?
Hey,
King of the Segways! King of the Segways!
Do you know what? They wouldn't last year because movie theaters have been banned in Saudi Arabia for 35 years,
and now
they're back.
Wow.
And the first movie they're going to show is Black Panther.
Of course they are.
Which is going to do very, very well.
The truth is, Marvel has actually been working on this for 35 years, guys. They are the ones who shut down the Saudi Arabia cinemas and brought them back just in time for Black Panther.
Yeah. Yeah. And all the movie theaters are going to be built.
This is a 35-year plan.
Out of vibranium. but yeah, no, it's a huge move forward for the fact that obviously Saudi is going to be opening its first movie theaters in 35 years.
It's a lot of money opening up, you know.
Huge investment.
You know, blockbusters too. Like, that's another territory.
And it's a really big market.
Yeah.
So I think that actually is going to be quite interesting. I think also if we see, we've had a lot of money coming from Saudi and sort of other areas of the Middle East over the last couple of years into Hollywood. Some of it clean and some of it not. You know, there have been issues in the past. But I think this is actually now, it's going to reinvigorate the industry there. And I think we're going to see some interesting, this is going to inspire a whole new generation of filmmakers. It's going to give them places to have their movies shown. They don't have to take it overseas where it won't get as much attention, perhaps. That could be really good. It's going to bring through some talent, you know, behind and in front of the camera. And I think also, you know, potentially people are going to see it because they can see it in their own backyard. A bit more of a viable investment. So I see it as being a pretty shrewd move. It is a big investment for movie theaters chains to put this money out there.
Someone put this man on television. Very well spoken, you know, on this subject. That was very eloquent.
No, but true.
You seem passionate about it.
No, I genuinely am. I mean, to me, I'm absolutely amazed that it's kind of, you know, I understand because of sort of, you know, the society that they have there. It's predominantly Muslim country, etc., etc. Socially, it hasn't been something that they thought was particularly appropriate. They didn't want a lot of Western movies coming in. So I understand why they haven't had it, but I think this is actually going to be really, really good.
Guys, this kid's on fire, and when someone's on fire on your team, you just pass the rock to him. So I'm just going to keep doing items that are going to get you excited. How about this Gary Whitta Last Starfighter thing? I've never seen The Last Starfighter. Nope.
You've never seen The Last Starfighter?
Nope, couldn't tell you a goddamn thing about it.
Oh, my God.
If you're a Schmodan fan watching this is a big hole for me. I have no idea what this is.
He doesn't enjoy it.
So why don't you go off on The Last Starfighter?
Okay, Last Starfighter is possibly... there are a lot of sci-fi movies that came out in the 80s, and some were given more love than others. And Last Starfighter is probably one of the underdog movies, but it's actually really, really sweet, really interesting. It's about a kid who basically is very, very good at this particular computer game called The Last Starfighter. He lives in a trailer park, and he plays his game.
Like Ready Player One.
but The Last Starfighter is actually a training program for an intergalactic fighting force. And they basically go, you're the highest player on Earth. We need you to come and help us. He gets recruited by this space-based fighting to kind of like the Rebel Alliance to come and help them defeat this other guy, because they're like, oh my God, he's amazing. So he's kind of the golden child of this planet, and so it's amazing. It's a really, really good
movie.
That's
cool. So it sort of puts gamers on a pedestal.
Yeah. It does, 100%. It's a really interesting take. It's a really good movie. I mean, there weren't a huge amount of stars in there. It really was kind of like a B-level, but there was a lot of love for it, and it's become something of a cult classic.
It's a cult classic,
It's a cult classic. And even today, it's obviously very, very 80s, but it actually stands up today pretty well. So the fact that, obviously, it's Gary Whitta, who was one of the writers of Rogue One, has been teasing this sequel, which I think is a really good idea. I'm amazed, and I had this conversation probably about a year ago with somebody, that I'm amazed that they haven't actually either done a sequel or remade this, because especially when people are really getting back into these sort of big sci-fi movies, there's a lot that could be done with it. I mean, people, Flight of the Navigator has been looked at several times as being remade.
Right.
And over those two movies, I think this would actually be the potential big money spinner. I could see a lot of really good stuff done with that. Today's special effects,
if it's made on the right budget,
could be really good. I don't even think you'd have to spend a huge amount of money on this. I think you could do it for 35, maybe 50 million, and still do a really, really good job, because obviously the things that are afforded to you now with in post, with tech stuff, etc., etc., you don't even have to build, if you didn't want to, many of the physical sets. A lot of it could be done you know, digitally, I think that could be done very easily for about 35 to 50 and make a sizable profit. I think it'd be really interesting.
All right.
So if you haven't seen it, you should, but it's like $8, $9 on Amazon. Also, other things are available. And it's really worth checking out. You haven't seen Last Starfighter. Not sure if it's streaming anywhere. I don't know. But it's worth, I don't think it's on Netflix. It might be on Amazon Prime, but it's definitely worth checking out.
I will try to track that down.
You should do. I'll buy that for you in the Rachel papers.
Oh, well, thank you.
Two films now that you previously probably didn't exist.
You also came in this morning talking about Simon Pegg.
Yes.
And his quote said he doesn't really think that Tarantino's ever going to do a Star Trek movie.
Yes. I mean, we can't... there's still persistent talk about this Tarantino Star Trek movie. Simon Pegg this week, obviously, he's been doing press for Ready Player One. He's been asked about it. He doesn't think that it's going to happen. Although, there are a number of Star Trek scripts that are out there and have been written. So the franchise is clearly still being looked at as something that they can move forward with. But as far as a Tarantino movie, and obviously we know that his other movie is moving forward, you know, at quite a pace at the moment. They've got a lot of substantial casting around that. I think that's likely more likely to happen, and certainly before he even looks at a Star Trek project. I would still be surprised. I'd love to see it. I'll be surprised if it happens.
It's as simple as this. If you ever thought Quentin Tarantino was actually going to direct a Star Trek movie, you don't really know Quentin Tarantino. That was never going to happen. It's never going to happen.
I agree.
Come on.
But isn't there something just deep inside of you that kind of would like to see what that would look like?
Honestly, absolutely not.
Really?
Yeah. And it doesn't get... You don't get to be a bigger Tarantino fan than me. I bleed Tarantino. There's no way I want to see him do a fucking Star Trek movie.
And we all know that everything in Tarantino's movies bleeds.
That's right.
At some point.
I'm getting a Pulp Fiction poster in like a week or two. It's showing up. I can't wait to fucking frame that shit. It's dope as shit.
Excellent.
I heard the Jigsaw guys are writing a sequel to that movie.
Yeah, correct, Jeff.
And guess what?
What?
You don't care? I'm all for it.
Really?
You know what? These movies are terrible. I'll see every single one.
No.
I saw it opening night.
I like the Saw movies.
They haven't been good.
There's varying degrees of goodness.
There's one good Saw movie. The rest are all probably, maybe you can get two in there as okay. The rest are not good.
Nah. I disagree.
But they have fun shit in them.
Yeah, I disagree. I think there are, in the original, there are four good movies.
The original what?
the one, two, and three, I like.
Okay.
And six, which is the medical one, which I think is really cool. But yeah, I have to admit, I was not a fan of Jigsaw. It didn't do it for me as a fan of the original franchise. It just, there was so much missing from that.
They need to start all over.
Yeah, I'm not bothered about it.
They need either a total reboot or they need to get rid of, no more John Kramer, none of that stuff, none of his legacy, none of his followers.
Well, I know, I mean, I'm not against it being about John Kramer and, you know, that kind of, sort of narrative, but they just need to do something creative rather than kill, dude. Reveal, end.
Dude. Is it a cliffhanger?
I was railing against the Connors and bringing back the Connor family for the Terminator, right? And that's only
I thought you were talking about Roseanne. I know you're a big Roseanne fan.
It's very trendy. Dude, I grew up watching Roseanne. I'm not going to watch a new show, but...
it's not bad.
That may be the case. But anyways...
The Connors, next on ABC.
I said stop using the Connors, and we've only gotten how many movies with them? Four or five? We've gotten seven, right? Seven now?
Yeah.
Is that what we're up to? Seven fucking John Kramer movies? Like, no, move on. It's over. Get rid of him. I can't believe you want to bring that character back. What's next?
Okay.
Want to do box office?
Let's do that. Box office.
We do need a jingle for that.
Box office. Office in a box.
And now we'll talk about the new releases too.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Do you want to do figures first or do you want to do reviews first?
Figures.
Okay, let's do the math. Hollywood math. Okay, so there are two big releases this week, really. A Quiet Place and Blockers. Both were in previews last night, Thursday. Quiet Place came out on top, 4.3 million, which is not
pretty swanky
at all for that. And Blockers is 1.5 million, which is a nice sum. Deserves more. We're looking at a take this weekend. Quiet Place is looking at around 30 million. I think it could do more. I think we could even see 35, possibly 40, because there are a lot of people who are really, really into this movie. Blockers is coming in at 16 to 20, but I'm thinking that's a little bit on the low side. I think we can see 20, possibly 23 on that.
I think you're absolutely right.
So, I think they're a little bit low.
Blockers opening night figures were probably hurt by a Quiet Place opening. Yeah. And you know, horror fans being what they are, you know, plus the fact that it's nighttime,
yeah,
you know, obviously you're going to go see A Quiet Place first. But yeah, I think that Blockers has really good word of mouth. Mm-hmm. I think that your analysts are underestimating the teen girl audience,
yeah,
who will find their way into this movie, even though it is rated R.
I think teen girls, yeah, and I think also dads. I think there are going to be a lot of parents who are
going
to go and
see this. Protective dads.
And I think sort of quite young parents as well. Obviously, these are girls going off to prom. But I think you're going to see sort of, you know, parents our age and younger who are going to go, and actually they won't be too far off remembering going to prom themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll be kind of like reliving that for them. And I think the fact that they're going to be having teenage kids, I think is going to be two very, very strong markets for this movie. Word of mouth is very strong as well on it. I mean, I saw both these movies this week, and Blockers really pleasantly surprised me.
So who was your favorite in Blockers?
The Australian
Geraldine Viswanathan.
Yes, that's right.
We have a wonderful interview with her.
She was
up on the tracking board. She is our up and comer of the month, and I'm very proud of that choice. I'm very proud of all my choices for up and comer of the month, but particularly this one. I thought she was just a breath of fresh air. Drew really singled her out in his review, which you should also read on the tracking board.
I did not know she was Australian until I'd seen and read a couple of interviews.
Yeah,
with
her. And she's in Eggplant Emoji, the Netflix movie about a guy who cuts off his own dick. That should be funny. I just think she's very talented, and she's in this other movie, Hala, that Will Smith produced. That's the complete opposite of these kinds of raunchy comedies.
She's very engaging in it.
Yeah, you know, all the girls were good. Gideon Adlin was very good.
Yeah.
Is that Pamela Adlin's daughter?
I would assume so.
I am assuming so. Just I haven't watched better things in a while. I don't know if she's one of the girls on that, but
I mean all the it's funny. Often in these, I mean there are a couple of people in this that you know, but generally it's not a hugely starry cast. They're like, oh, I know that person from that thing. John Cena is probably the biggest. Can I just say, John Cena's mouth is massive. Several times he opened his mouth wide in that movie, and I genuinely thought,
he's a big guy.
I wonder, yeah, but his mouth is huge. I'm like, I wonder how much stuff he can get in his mouth. I don't know why I thought that.
Yeah, that's a weird, it's a weird thing to be thinking.
It's huge. She
is Pamela Adlin's daughter. She has credits on Louie and Better Things.
It's a really strong cast. I mean, the script is really tight, and it's actually directed by the person who wrote the Pitch Perfect movies. It's her directorial debut,
right?
And I'll be honest with you, this packed way more of a punch and had a stronger narrative and way more laughs than certainly the last Pitch Perfect movie and possibly the second. It was really well constructed. I do feel a little bit maybe that this was the project for her that she really was kind of has been focusing on for the last couple of years and honing, and perhaps let those suffer a little bit. But
so did you know that the kid in it who is with Geraldine, the drug dealing kid?
Yeah.
He is Tim Robbins' son.
Really?
And Susan Sarandon's son, yeah.
That's amazing.
Miles Robbins. Who else stood out in this? Oh, the Gary Cole blindfold game with Gina Gershon. That was great. And could you get two better people for that game, too?
No, there are several moments in this movie that are just classic. Just classic movie moments.
You're gonna go bust out the blindfold and play that at home, aren't you?
I'm
going to make it a Blockers weekend.
It's how I start Shabbat.
It's how I start Shabbat.
It's how I start Shabbat.
I love this kid. Oh, my God. The Chaim.
Hey. Do you know what they say?
Blockers
it's
is good.
Sundown and when you do a blindfold sex game.
What's funny is I'm editing Drew's review yesterday, and he's talking about how, you know, the movie doesn't – the raunchy gags are not like what you remember from the movie. You actually couple days later, you remember the conversation that maybe Ike Barinholtz has at the end with his daughter.
Yeah.
You remember
He's
some of the
amazing in this movie.
He really is. I love Ike Barinholtz.
I loved him in this.
I think everybody's really good. Leslie Mann is really good. She's just such a gifted physical comedian. Yeah. She has sort of become like the overshadowed by Judd a little, you know, over the last decade as Judd has become Judd. It's become like the... Oh, there's Judd Apatow and his wife, Leslie Mann. Leslie Mann was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
But
also, I think, I mean, I thought that even when it wasn't the straight comedy, there were conversations between... the parents, the adults in the movie that were genuinely heartwarming and also very
plays
funny
on
when
real
they needed
fears.
To be. Yeah, and I've got friends who've got teenage kids and you know, I interact with them and I was like, these are the conversations that I'm having. It was really very much, it wasn't like, oh, it's Hollywood, here's our interpretation of what people do and say. It was very authentic. I mean, obviously it played up for a Hollywood comedy, but you know, it was genuinely, there was authenticity right at the heart of it.
Gideon and Adlin is really good in this as well.
Yeah.
I haven't talked about Catherine Newton much, but she does her job and does it well. She's sort of playing the straight girl.
Yeah.
You know? She doesn't get like the big laughs necessarily.
Yeah.
But she serves her role well.
I just thought the whole thing was really well played. And sometimes with this type of comedy, you run the risk of it being some really strong set pieces strung together by other stuff. And this really didn't have that feel about it at all. It was consistently strong, whether it was a gag coming at you or whether it was some really nice interplay kind of between those moments, between characters or setting out narratives and stuff like that. It was just a really strong comedy for me. It was very, very good. I'm looking forward to a sequel, and I already have an idea for
that.
They
definitely should.
Definitely should.
You know, the parents come to college or something. Let's talk about A Quiet Place.
Okay.
You don't have to whisper.
A Quiet Place.
I mean, this is, to me, the best narrative film that I've seen this year. It is number two on my blog, on the rankings list, only behind Three Identical Strangers, which is a documentary. I was just so impressed by the work that John Krasinski does here, both in front of and behind the camera. He's got a great script from Beck and Woods that he co-wrote with those guys. We have an interview with them coming up later today on the Tracking Board, so please check that out. It's a pretty good interview. Beck and Woods, man. Those guys are talented. Emily Blunt is fantastic. The daughter is fantastic. The movie's genuinely scary, and it's PG-13. Simon, what did you think?
I'll be honest with you. I really enjoyed it. Afterwards, there are a number of things that kind of bugged me a little bit about the movie.
I mean, can you, without getting into super spoiler territory, can you sort of tell me what some of your concerns were? Because I'm genuinely curious.
Yeah, I mean, I would have liked a little bit more explanation around how the creatures in the movie came to be there.
Okay.
I would have liked some sort of explanation, and
right, because you come in around like day, I don't know, 79 or 87 of this thing, so it's already been going on for a few months, and this family has sort of learned a new way of living.
Yeah. And we, through the narrative at the beginning of the movie, and this is not spoiler stuff because it's in trailers, you see posters of people going missing, you see references on newspapers to what is going on, but there isn't anything ever there about how this whole thing started, which, to be honest with you...
So you want that backstory?
I would like a little bit, somewhere, that little bit of backstory. There are other things that I probably don't want to go into because it might be into spoiler territory. I'm just kind of, there were certain elements. There's a MacGuffin in the movie that I'm surprised that the main characters of the movie hadn't already picked up on quite early on.
We can talk about them maybe next week and give our audience a week to see this movie.
There were just a couple of things that kind of didn't quite work, but it certainly did not in any way spoil the movie for me. That was, if anything, being picky and saying just how
I think
I'd
a
like
sequel could
more.
Get into the origins of
that's
those creatures
what I was
and
thinking
that kind of thing.
Would work really, really it, nicely. Because you've got it, a space of, you know, you say
if they do
days.
A sequel, you know, this is the kind of movie that I don't know necessarily demands one.
I wouldn't want it to be like they're doing with Cloverfield now, where they're opening it up into Quiet Place universe. I would like to see a prequel to that. I think that would be quite good. I would even like to see these same characters again, but how they got to where they are, and there are other characters around it. I mean, there. This is, again, I believe, in the trailer where they light a fire in the evening and there are other encampments around them where there are fires being lit en route.
Right.
I was kind of thinking, like, well, there was no interaction between any of those groups. I would like to see you could pick it up at any of those encampments.
Be almost like there's lots of options the Purge here. Franchise.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? And that's not a spoiler, but I just, because that's been out there in trailers and features and stuff like that. So I think that would be quite interesting to play with. But I mean, okay. As a movie, I was kind of, it was sold for me a little bit more on being a straight out horror movie. To me, I would say yes, it is horror with a small h. It's more of a monster with a capital M movie for me. The tension was ramped up exceptionally
well. The suspense is fantastic. It's like a dramatic horror movie. Superb.
Yeah, it really was.
It's like a family drama cloaked in a horror movie.
And it's amazing how there are so many Hollywood movies that are crammed with dialogue. And the dialogue in this is, there is dialogue, but it's quite sparse. But
which is refreshing. I mean, you can feel it in the theater. The theater's quiet. You know, like they're staying quiet too.
Yeah, if you can get an audience to shut the fuck up, you know, it's
that's impressive in this day and age. Yeah,
it was just I loved it. I mean, I thought the performances, the lack of dialogue, but how they acted with everything else they had around them was great. The ending for me, I kind of felt was a little bit by the book, but was totally fine.
That's fair.
But I thought it was really strong. It would certainly be a 4 or 4.5 out of 5 for me. Little things that niggled for me, but okay. I mean, certainly if you've got 15,
check it out this weekend though. Make up your own minds out there.
This weekend though. The movies, because
go to both of them.
Go to both of them if you can. Get a movie pass and go to like everything. But I mean, there are two really strong movies, two very different movies, but both really satisfying in completely different ways. But I loved A Quiet Place. I thought it was great. I'd certainly give it a 4 or 5 star.
All right, we've got about 5 to 10 minutes left in the show.
Let's talk about. There's a little film premiering at Cannes.
Solo, a Star Wars story, confirmed early this morning that it will debut on the croisset.
It's pronounced croissant.
I don't think it is.
It's not.
That'll could debut 10 days before its official release date on May 25th.
Yeah.
Is this a sign of confidence, Simon? Is this Disney saying, we've got the goods, we've saved this movie, we've fixed it, and we're ready to show it to the world and international journalists, you know, maybe 5 days earlier than we would really have to?
Do you know what? I think it's really difficult to tell because this is not the first movie like this that we've seen. And certainly not the first Star Wars movie that we've seen debuting in.
Right, there's been two other movies
that have done that. And also you've had movies like Indiana Jones, the last Indiana Jones debuted at Cannes. I mean, I don't know. I mean, those movies have not been great. Emoji Movie, I think, debuted at Cannes as well.
I don't think that's true.
Does that not debut at Cannes?
No.
Are you sure? I'm sure that was the opening film. That wasn't. But no, I don't think we can read too much into this, whether it's something they're really positive about. I think we're just going to have to wait. I mean, I saw lots of think pieces around this yesterday about, oh, is this a vote of confidence? Oh my God, last time they opened, you know, it was terrible. I'm not entirely...
Yeah, people are probably reading too much into it. I'll give you that.
I think people are reading too much into it, and I'll be honest with you, Solo is, of all these Star Wars-related movies that have come out, it's the one that I'm perhaps most worried about. But I'm very curious to see what they've done with it.
I think this is what Disney had to weigh here. They're going to have to show the movie 5 days before it opens anyway. It's for reviews, right?
Yeah.
Give or take 5 days. So to show it 10 days early, you're basically showing it 5 days earlier than you maybe have to.
Mm-hmm.
So are those 5 extra days of maybe spoilers getting out there, bad coverage circulating, whatever it may be, is that worth the international press boosts that you will get from debuting at Cannes with the entire world press corps there? That's an interesting consideration to weigh. That's all.
Mm.
That's basically what it is.
I mean, well, it's certainly going to be one of the movies that is going to get... It's going to be one of the top maybe two, maybe three stories, depending on any sort of, you know, stunts that come out that I think people are going to be talking out from Cannes this year. But I don't really think... I think if it was, they thought it was really bad, they wouldn't put it out there.
Which is a shame. I kind of think it's a shame. It's like, you know, is that what you want people to leave your festival talking about? Is Solo?
I just find that kind of movie at Cannes, to me, is just generally a really odd fit.
Yeah, it's taking a time slot away from some other kind of art film. It just seems unfair.
It's not a Cannes movie.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it, personally. Okay, what else is there?
Well, people are asking, actually, sticking with Rogue One for a second. Zeno Arrow is asking about Tony Gilroy's comments about Rogue One and saying that basically he thought it was a bit of a mess. Did you see these comments this
week? Yeah, I did.
Yeah,
it was very refreshing. It was like, you know, finally him confirming everything, all the rumors, everything we've heard.
Yeah, I mean, do I think they're out of line? No, I don't think they are at all. I think you've got to be honest about these things.
Dude, the interesting thing, the only thing we should really care about,
okay,
is the lesson from these comments, is that Tony Gilroy came in and did he? Would you say he saved the movie?
Yeah, I really like Rogue One.
Yeah, a lot of people do.
Yeah,
I think it's okay. I had high expectations for that one, actually, because it was a standalone. So he's saying that he didn't care about Star Wars. He doesn't like Star Wars. He's not a fan of Star Wars. He just came in and looked at it as like a movie with problems. And these are the problems. Yes, that is what needs to happen with some of these, not just Star Wars, but a lot of these movies. You're hiring these fans, and the fans are honestly, they're too close to it. They're so into the nerdy, nitty-gritty details. It's a lot, particularly with like DC movies, I think. Hire someone who's not a fan, who just wants to make a movie using these characters. I think you're going to be a lot better off. That's all.
No, I agree, and I don't think that's just a Star Wars thing. I think that's across the board in filmmaking. Sometimes it pays off. More often than not, it just becomes a fanboy thing, and I think it causes too many issues. But no, I don't think he's out of line at all. I think it's, you know, as you say, refreshing. Okay, a couple of trailers came out this week, Jeff.
We have like 5 minutes left in the show.
Okay, we'll be super quick on this. Did you see the Upgrade trailer?
Is there somebody coming in after us in the studio?
Okay. Oh, okay, I do need to be out of here quite quick because I'm gonna go over to Fox. Okay. Upgrade trailer. Did you see it this week?
Looked awesome. Looked so badass. I was like, whoa, really what the fuck is this?
Night School trailer.
It looked funny. I think the trailer maybe could have been a little bit funnier, but I'm gonna see it.
I'm very much looking forward to this. I'm like you. I'm hoping that there's more jokes in the movie. I hope they're not the same jokes.
It's a great pairing, the Kevin Hart Tiffany Haddish pairing. But I thought Taron Killam was hilarious in the trailer. He stole it.
Like in a lot of these comedies, I mean, when I saw the trailers for Blockers, I thought that looked really funny. The film itself is considerably funnier than even the trailers. So I think they're sort of putting the edge of caution there. And the first Purge trailer came out this morning.
I did see it this morning. Okay, I made time.
I love the Purge franchise. I think it's great.
I'm into it. I'm there opening night.
Yeah.
You know? Since I never get invited to anything.
Obviously, I'm going to make a massive assumption that obviously you've been to Halloween Horror Nights over the last couple of years, right? Yes. I'm assuming that we're going to see The Purge appearing at that again this year in some form of scare zone.
I have no idea. Don't they switch it up each year? I know you were very excited about Stranger Things.
They do.
That is cool.
Yeah. They do switch it up every year. They have different mazes, but they have walkthrough zones, which have for the last couple of years been Purge themed. So I think that's what might happen again. Maybe we'll get an entire Purge maze. We saw some of it in the Blumhouse collection. You love talking about
these mazes.
I do. And Stranger Things was the first one that was announced for this year at Halloween Horror Nights at Universal in Hollywood, Orlando, and Singapore. Not all the mazes in all the parks are going to be the same. They're going to be slightly different, but the first one that is going to be in all three parks is Stranger Things, which is amazing.
I'm just so glad that we know that it's going to be in the Singapore park because that is what our audience wants to hear.
It's true.
Adam Sandler confirmed to star in the Safdie Brothers Uncut Gems, something I had put at the bottom of my murder mystery story and very much on purpose. What do you think? He's replacing Jonah Hill. He's not joining Jonah Hill. I'm told he's definitely replacing Jonah Hill. Jonah Hill is out. He fell out in January. And the idea of Sandler doing a fucking cool like crime drama from the guys who did Good Time, that really excites me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah. To be honest with you, these days, I prefer Adam Sandler when he's being serious.
That's fair, although I am looking forward to his Chris Rock movie the week of. Carl Urban joining The Boys. I know that's TV, but that's kind of cool.
Very cool.
Why the Last Man moving forward at FX.
Yep.
These are like big, you know, sort of geek comic properties. Dan Mazo hired to write Armada for Universal. That's based on the Ernie Cline book.
Correct.
Did you ever read that?
I didn't read it, but rather annoyingly, I suddenly remembered recently that when I was relocating, I had a proof book of Armada.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave it to my local charity shop in London as part of I need to get rid of some shit before I move. So somewhere there is a proof copy of that book, which is worth now a lot of money.
I tried to read it and I wasn't a big fan of it. Like, I loved Ready Player One, and maybe that's, you know, that's sort of what I was expecting. And then when it didn't live up to that, I made it like maybe 50 pages and stopped. Guillermo del Toro launching a horror label at Fox Searchlight.
Yeah.
That's kind of good news,
Very
I think.
Very good news.
He can, you know, shepherd the next generation of genre filmmakers. The Red Sonja movie got a writer, Edward Ashley Miller, I believe. Yeah. Or Ashley Edward
Miller.
Not entirely
excited about that, but...
Yeah, I could care less about Red Sonja. Jordan Peele's doing a Lorena Bobbitt docuseries. That's fucking awesome.
Did you see my tweet about that yesterday?
No, what was it?
By the fact that everybody
since
when
we need the requisite Simon Thompson penis joke on
when the director shouts cut, everyone's gonna wince because he had his penis cut off.
That's right. Okay, that's a good one. Yeah. Tracy Morgan joining Taraji P. Henson in What Men Want, which is based on inspired by What Women Want. I'm told he's gonna be playing basically LeVar Ball, which is kind of awesome. An NBA like dadager. Keith Stanfield joining Gina Rodriguez and Someone Great at Netflix. I got that nice break on Friday afternoon. You can check that at the tracking board along with my New Mutants story that I posted on Friday.
What is this?
Which was a big thing. Yeah. I mean, so, you know, I knew it was going to, I knew I was going to take some shit for it, and I did. But yeah, that is what is going on with New Mutants, which is essentially that it sounds like Fox got the movie that they ordered, and then they just changed their minds and decided to order something different. And they're going to have to reshoot the first half of the movie. They want to amp up the scares, sort of in the wake of its success, and they were going to try to get John Hamm in the movie as Mr. Sinister, and then Fox said you can't really use Mr. Sinister. And I think that they're going to, you know, have Antonio Banderas in it.
Okay.
And yeah, I mean, by the way, there were a lot of things on the show that got picked up last week, like Chastain, you know, doing basically playing Miss Sinister. I said that she was going to be playing like Mr. Sinister. I didn't know that there was a Miss Sinister and the Matt Damon Spider-Man thing. I have something that we could drop right now at the end of the show.
What is that?
I heard... all right, I put this poll out there yesterday about like who I should have for my May up-and-comer of the month, and I mentioned Jack Kessie.
Yes.
Who's going to be the villain in Deadpool 2.
Mm-hmm. I took part in that poll.
Yeah? I heard he got cut from the movie. Breaking news.
Wow.
So check that one out, guys. But yeah, I don't know if we're going to be seeing Jack Kessie in Deadpool 2. We'll see. I haven't seen the movie. I haven't talked to anybody who's seen the movie, but I've heard... You know, someone chimed in after that poll, and they were like, "I don't know if he's still in it."
Hopefully so we'll see. Scenes will still be in there. You know, I was Ryan Reynolds' body double,
right? Of course,
for the topless scenes.
Speaking of Fox, KJ Apa replacing Kian Lawley in The Hate U Give. That's the guy, the YouTube star who dropped a bunch of racist comments. Never good idea.
Word of advice: probably best not to do that.
Yeah, KJ Apa from Riverdale, which I don't watch. Do you ever see that?
No.
Although
I know he's very popular. I'm sure he's very popular.
Zazie Beetz lined up like two... Oh, okay, Zazie Beetz, she lined up Against All Enemies this week with Kristen Stewart and Pale Blue Dot from the Fargo creator Noah Hawley, and that's with Natalie Portman. I heard she might also do Angry Birds movie too. I don't know.
We'll see. I can wait for that movie.
They need some diverse cast members. A very white voice cast, yeah, I feel like.
We need another Angry Birds movie.
Yeah, but we're going to get one.
Well,
so.
Yeah, we are.
They're definitely looking to get Zazie Beetz' voice, her lovely pipes. Colin Trevorrow back to direct Jurassic World 3.
Yeah, saw that.
That broke right after the show last week.
It did.
What do you think of that one?
Yeah, great.
Yeah, you great?
I like Jurassic World. I mean, I know a lot of people didn't like it. I really enjoyed it.
It's kind of just like the J.J. Abrams Star Wars thing where you direct the first thing and then come back for the last one.
Yeah. I'm happy with that.
I'm not surprised that he is coming back, particularly after the lumps that he took following Book of Henry.
He was heavily involved with the second one. Obviously, he's not directing the new Jurassic World movie, but he still was very hands-on.
Of course.
So it's not like he's, you know, stepped back from it for a couple of years and he's going to be picking it up fresh again. So, I mean, he is deep, deep, deep undercover.
Jake Gyllenhaal starring in this thriller, Welcome to Vienna. Did you see what that was about yesterday?
I didn't. I did see the fact that he'd signed up for
it. Yeah, it's like a Focus Features thing anyways. George Clooney, speaking of, I think that's at Focus too, Trading in Starvation.
Yep.
Did any of these movies actually like get made though? Like,
a lot of them are not seeing the light of day. Like, I mean, there's a lot of
there were
stuff
all
we
these announcements
about.
A few years ago, but like DiCaprio and Tom Hardy doing like there's like poaching movies and climate change movies, and like these movies never actually happen, right?
A lot of them don't.
Yeah, We'll see.
Maybe the major cast depart, and then it's kind of low level stuff, and it kind of appears as a smaller movie.
I mean, obviously Clooney, as a big producer, has to develop a lot of different projects. Yeah. But I will say that particular project also has Nicole and Bly, the producers of Spotlight, Nicole Rockland, Bly Faust. So maybe, you know, they work their magic on Spotlight. I'm not going to put it past them. They could do it again. Eric Bana doing television this week.
I also saw
Dirty
that.
John. That was interesting. It's Eric Bana coming
based
to TV.
On a podcast, right?
It's supposed to be pretty cool, that story.
I have not listened to Dear John, but
Bo Burnham's movie Gay Kid and Fat Chick got a director, Amy Rubin York, I forget what it is. Raymond Barani signed on to do The White Tiger. I think Fahrenheit 451 looks really good.
It looks really good.
Yeah, yeah, I'm really pumped for that one. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw that at Cannes either.
Before
its HBO debut.
When is it debuting on HBO?
In May, in mid to late May. Fine, so, fine. Torture Report, Adam Driver, John Hamm, Ned Benning. Mm-hmm. Lin-Manuel Miranda got In the Heights out of The Weinstein Company.
Yep.
Speaking of The Weinstein Company, Dylan Sellers left. Christine Birch was outed Sony for that pot, for smoking pot, according to Variety. Like, guys, there's more going on there than an executive smoking pot on the lot. I just love how it gets boiled down to that, because it's like a sort of juicy tidbit. And I'm guilty of exploiting that as well, but come on. There are obviously bigger issues than that.
Yeah.
Sue Kroll launched Kroll & Co.
Yeah.
So my dad calls, and you know he knows that Justin is married to someone in the industry, our friend Justin Kroll of Variety, and so he's like, "Oh, is that did Mrs. Kroll launch a production company? She's like a real mover and shaker out there." I was like, "That is not his wife. She's been around a long time, and she has a good slate." I will say, the movies that Sue Kroll looks like she's making up there,
yep,
are movies that. Oh, God, it seems like Warner Brothers hasn't made these kinds of movies in years. Like, nice mid-budget things, like A Star is Born, like Edward Norton's Motherless Brooklyn. The slate intrigues me. Michael Citrick, by the way, dropped Harvey Weinstein as a client this week.
Yeah, I saw that.
When you're getting dropped by Citrick, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Well, you wonder what's coming out next.
Chris Hemsworth manager Will Ward launched his own company. We're doing some industry stuff here. And CBS Films, making its first appearance on Meet the Movie Press in quite a while, won an auction for Russian Roulette, which sounds like, again, like the type of movie. It's about the Trump-Putin election stuff. It sounds like the kind of thing that will never get made. At least not by CBS Films.
There's a lot of those around at the moment, projects related to Trump and the Trump campaign.
Maybe in 5 to 7 years, I could see that as an HBO movie, but I'd be pretty surprised if CBS moved forward on this one. That'll do it, I think.
Well, I mean, first of all, before the show ends, I must apologize for not reading your New Mutants thing, but obviously something that you didn't read of mine this week.
Yes.
That
plug away.
Did a piece for Forbes this week. I actually dropped it very carefully on April the 1st, but well after the deadline. Ready Player One, watching that movie, made me think that actually it would make a really good theme park ride. I explained why in the piece that I've written for Forbes. Obviously, it's done very well for Spielberg. Quite lulled at those pieces this week where people were saying, you know, Spielberg needs a hit, you know, saving his career. He's doing okay. So if you want to have this little think piece and I talk about other theme park rides and licensing and stuff like that, go to Forbes, Google my name, Simon Thompson, and you will find my Ready Player One theme park ride piece. And also, if you're interested in owning Russell Crowe's jockstrap, that is going up for auction in Sydney this weekend.
That's what you want to close the show on, Russ?
I shit you not.
I think it's definitely time to close the show now. Okay. Once you hit the Russell Crowe's
jockstrap for
Jesus
sale.
Jesus Christ, Simon.
It's available. $200.
All right, that'll do it for me, the Movie Press, folks. Thank you for watching the Popcorn Talk Network. Make sure to rate, comment, subscribe.
Please do.
All that fun stuff. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TheInSnyder. And what, Simon?
And
what?
You can find
what?
Me at ShowbizSimon on Instagram and Twitter. And I've got a couple of really cool interviews dropping on Forbes next week.
Well, if they're not with The Rock and Kevin Hart, then I don't care. Have a good weekend, folks.
Have a good one. Tell your friends.
Shh.
Like, subscribe.
Quiet.
The quiet place.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principals.